We are working with a book called It's Up to You by Ernest Holmes. And this is the chapter called Who Are You? Who Are You? And when I first started going to a Science of Mind church in Denver 25 years ago, I used to cringe when I heard the word God. And it took me quite a while to desensitize myself to that word, because in Science of Mind, we think of God as infinite energy and spirit and life force, and we see that divine energy everywhere. And so sometimes when I quote Ernest Holmes, he uses the word God, and I see people flinch. So that's what he's talking about. The beauty of his philosophy, one of my favorite quotes, he said, "Loose the boundaries of your sense of self and let in more spiritual territory. Redefine who you think you are." And so that's what we're going to talk about today, is ways of finding that bigger boundary, that more expansive self of the truth of who we are. Ernest said, "This whole philosophy is based on the assumption that standing within and back of each one of us is God, the eternal presence as us, that there is nothing between us and it but our belief. Therefore, the thesis is that everyone is God, though in the germ, perhaps, that within the most humble of us stands the personification of the Almighty, and that as much of this as we loose through right knowing constitutes our spiritual power." So we are allowing ourselves to see more clearly. And he went on to say, "We need to change our mode of thought and try to adjust it to this divine ideal, which has power." And if we turn within ourselves and find the divine, we can commune with the eternal, because the other side of our nature is eternal. There is this side, the transitory form, and then the other side, the infinite, eternal nature. And we bring the two of them together. And this local part of us is the expression of the non-local part of us. And so we are trying to change our thinking so that we begin to think of ourselves as this integrated, eternal, infinite, and temporal, finite person. Not either or, but both and. And the reason that I asked Barb to sing the song there is that this quote from the chapter we're talking about: "Many of us are running hither and yon, searching for reality outside ourselves." In the song, that's the traveling to Rome or Paris. When the conscious realization of this inner divinity is within, it is indwelling as well as overdwelling, and ever enfolded within the human personality. The search for reality must eventually end in the realization that is within us. Sooner or later, we must come to the conclusion that that which we look for, we look with, and that which we find, we take with us in the search. So we find it because it went there with us. There is nowhere we can go where that divine nature, that truth, isn't. But we tend to define it as external, and so we can't find it, because we need to find it in here first. And so it's way closer to home than we may originally have expected. That love, that light, that peace. And the energy of that beautiful nature, that beautiful nature within us, is so powerful. And I wanted to share a story with you that comes from the book Finding Your Way in a Wild New World by Martha Beck. She tells a story of, she tells many stories of her son who has Down syndrome. And he has been a remarkable teacher for her and for many people through her books. And his name is Adam. And Adam has a friend named Joey who has had a really difficult time in his life, because not only does he have Down syndrome, but first his stepdad died. And in this particular chapter, his mom is in the process of passing away and then has passed away. And so we start out at the funeral for Joey's mom in this part of the story. And Martha says, at the service, I make sure Adam sits next to Joey because I remember how the boys helped each other cope through the services for Joey's stepfather. Adam sat with his arm around his friend, squeezing his shoulder at the times when Joey quietly began to weep. This time, Joey seemed fine, almost detached. Then the funeral began, and a friend of Jane stands up and begins to play the flute. Suddenly, Joey doubles up in his chair with a cry like a wounded animal. I've never heard such pure pain in my life. As he begins to sob, I practically shove Adam to the floor so I can grab Joey. Maybe his heart and brain entrain mine, because as I hold him, I feel an oceanic grief, far deeper than my own sorrow at losing my friend. I've never cried so hard in public myself, yet I feel strange lack of resistance to this sadness. After 90 seconds, the amount of time it takes the body to process a wave of intense, unrestricted emotion, Joey relaxes in my arms, panting as if he's run a race. I hold him as tightly as ever, but I can feel peace flowing through him now. Someone tells a story about his mom, and Joey loudly corrects her, a good-natured, happy heckler. Then another spasm of grief grips him, and we cry again. It goes on like that through the service. It's like helping a woman give birth. Adam has taken the seat next to me, and I sit between these two little men, wondering, as I often do, if their consciousness is different from mine. Apes whose DNA is almost identical to humans live in a different mental universe. What might an extra chromosome do to the perceptions of people with Down syndrome? I remember my friend and editor telling me about her conversation with an author who had autism. Betsy was discussing ultraviolet light, explaining that bees can see it, though humans can't. A bee could see streaks of color in this flower, she'd said, pointing to a plain white daisy. The author responded, "You mean you can't see the patterns in that flower?" Sitting between Adam and Joey, I muse about the way they do seem to be able to see in the dark like cats. Does Down syndrome allow them to see infrared below the visible light spectrum? Scientists tell us that 99.999% of light in the universe is invisible to us. Can Adam and Joey see a different slice of that particular pie? Much more important, why is it that those affected by Down syndrome are capable of such extraordinary love? Does Down syndrome take from them the illusion of separation, that bit of frightened imagination that sends the rest of us reeling into darkness? After the funeral, friends from Special Olympics bring us food, but Adam is exhausted and asks to go home. As we get in the car, he says, "Mom, I didn't cry." "I know, honey," I said, "but it would be all right if you did. Even strong men cry at very sad times, and this is a very sad time." Adam thinks about this in silence for a minute or two. Then he says, "It's easier since the light came and opened my heart." He speaks quite clearly, but I think I've misheard him. "What?" I ask. "Did you say a light came and opened your heart?" "Yes," Adam said. "I was sitting on my bed in my room, and it came, and it touched my heart, and my heart opened. And ever since then, things aren't so hard." We stop at a red light, and I stare at him. "When was this?" "May 10th, he says. "It's now February." "You mean last year?" I asked him. "No, a long time ago. I was in middle school." The signal turns green, and I drive silently for a while. "I'm really glad you told me that, Adam," I finally said, Because I saw like that once too. And you're right, after it touches your heart, nothing is ever as hard again. At that moment, I intensely regret the tired old cliché, see the light, exists to trivialize something so entirely glorious. I don't talk about it often, I told him. I'm not sure most people understand. I'm really glad you do. I glance over to see one of the biggest smiles Adam has ever smiled, which, believe you me, is saying something. We resume our usual companionable silence, and then as I pull the car into the garage, I think of something that might give him comfort. You know, Adam, when I was in the light, it told me it's always with us, even though we can't see it. I know he'll understand how the light can tell people things. It just does. But Adam's response takes me completely by surprise. Oh, I can see it, he says calmly. My jaw drops. You can? I asked. Sure, he says, sounding a little surprised. I can't. All the time? Yes. Well, I have to think for a second. So where do you see it? Is it inside your chest or your head or next to you or up by the ceiling or what? Adam shakes his head slightly, smiling the patient, compassionate smile of a seasoned wayfinder talking to a dim-witted Cub Scout. Mom, he says kindly, it's everywhere. It's everywhere. Isn't that an amazing story? That book is filled with stories that are that touching in so many different ways. It's called Finding Your Way in a Wild New World by Martha Beck. And so Ernest Holmes in this chapter says, who is there that at times has not felt this inner presence, this inner sense of a greater reality which bears witness to itself through our highest acts and our deepest emotions? In the long run, each will fully express his divinity, for the urge to unfold is constant and unremitting. Her divinity too, not just his. Beyond all revelation, behind all experience is a unity. Through all is a diversity, and saturating all is divinity. The intellect must give its consent, and the mind must unify with the spirit. I loved what Catherine said earlier about like-heartedness. People talk about like-mindedness, but I love that you brought in like-heartedness. I have never heard anyone say that before, so thank you for that phrase. It touched me deeply. So, this inner presence, this uniqueness of who we are, that story about Adam talked specifically to his uniqueness. But I believe that each one of us has a uniqueness that is that beautiful as that uniqueness we can see so exquisitely in Adam when we hear that story. Ernest said, the more one senses the universality of things, the more universal the individual mind becomes, the more individual it can become, the more one has with which to individualize that universality. We are then individualizing the universality. We are not becoming more alike. We are becoming more individually divine. There is no one who ever took our place or ever can or ever will. There is no one who can do exactly what we can do in the same way. The eternal has put the imprint of individualization of itself in everyone. We are each individualizing the eternal, each of us unique. So many times the children see so clearly. And I, as I get ready to give a talk, am always looking for things in my life that illustrates this thing about what I'm to speak on and who are you has been on my mind for a couple of weeks. And so I've been looking for those moments when I had a glimpse into someone or something. And one of them came while I was actually locked in the individual shower, taking a shower and washing my hair at the gym. And so here I am, the water's running, and I'm hearing a voice over the shower. And it turns out it's a mom and a little boy in the shower next to mine. And the mom says to the little boy, "What was your favorite thing?" And the little boy said, "Jumping in the pool." And she said, "Oh, I was so proud of you when you jumped in by yourself." And this little boy said, "I'm getting good at everything I do. I'm growing big and I'm learning really fast." And I thought, that's a child who knows who he is. He is not confused about who he is. He's clear that he's the cat meow. He is the thing, and he's doing it, and he's proud of himself for doing it, and he's loving himself for doing it. And his mom is encouraging him to appreciate himself for all of the good things he does. One of the wonderful things about my life right now is that I have the opportunity to listen to the Abraham Hicks live broadcasts almost every Saturday and share them with my friends, which is a real treat. And they talk all the time about who we really are. And so they have been talking about that, and I've been pulling quotes from the recent workshops because they've just been exquisite in terms of talking to us. And they talk in terms of being blended beings, blending the infinite with the finite, blending the local and the non-local. And for many years, I've been studying Abraham since 1995. And for years, I was trying to blend that infinite with my finite. And I wasn't sure how to do that. It wasn't coming clear to me from what they were teaching in those days how to do that. And one day, I picked up one of the books by Ernest Holmes called Anatomy of Healing Prayer. And in there, he said, there is nothing to be disintegrated or reintegrated. And something melted within me in those words. There's nothing to be disintegrated or reintegrated. So the blending wasn't something that I was having to do. I was trying to do something, and there was nothing to do. And he went on to describe that the wholeness is already there waiting to be revealed. And I've summarized that within myself as saying it's not a matter of creating yourself to be something you are not. It's a matter of perceiving something you already are. So the shift is a shift in perception. It's not about blending something or doing something that you're not doing. It's about seeing what's already here. As Ernest said, when you get there, you discover it's there because you brought it there. And what you are looking for, you are looking with. It's within you. So here's a quote. Here's a quote from Abraham talking about being blended today. They said, "We love talking to you about the fullness of who you are, and we want to pronounce you all blended. Blended, 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 more than you give yourself credit for. You're blended when you sleep. You don't know it. You're blended when you're born. Your dog's blended. You're blended when you're laughing. You're blended when you're looking at someone across the table and you're loving them so." I see a lot of people being blended doing that in here. You're blended. You're blended when you're appreciating the brilliance of another. You're blending when you're appreciating the humor of another. You're blended when you're interested in something. When something catches your ear and you really want to focus on it and you really want to know more about it, you're blended. You're blended when you've got something really good in your mouth and you're savoring it to the point your eyes are nearly rolling back in your head. You're blended when you're enjoying what you're eating. You're blended when you're feeling good. You're blended, you see. It's not even the blending between you and the bigger you. It's just you. We want you to be present, but who are you? Who you are is the combination of all of this. Who you are is someone who explores and comes to personal decisions and who then allows the personal understanding, knowledge, and beingness of that broader, wiser, older self to flow with you in this moment. And if you can just blend those unique perspectives and recognizing that you're in alignment or you're not, and when you feel good, you are, and when you feel bad, you're not, just leave it at that. If you could just let your dominant intent to be standing in the place where you are in alignment with your central grid, then everything else would take care of itself. Now, standing in alignment with your central grid, what could that possibly mean? Well, in Science of Mind, we call it the qualities of God. I have a friend who calls it angelic qualities. I'm feeling in harmony. I'm feeling at peace. I'm seeing something as graceful. I'm seeing the beauty in something. I'm feeling the energy flow. I'm recognizing the oneness of life. I'm feeling the unity. I know the wholeness that's here. All of those are places that are in alignment with our central grid, because all of those qualities of the divine are the core of our being. You know, sometimes they say we have a wounded inner child. But I think even more importantly, we have an inner golden child that's never been hurt, that's never been touched in a negative way, that intuitively is innocent and trusting and open-hearted and open-minded and receptive, who knows that they're growing, who knows that they learn fast, who feels the fullness of who they are and trusts its expression in the world. And that's who we are. We are that little one that came into this world knowing. And somehow we got unlearned. We unlearned the truth of our being and we learned something different. But the people who taught us that didn't know. They did the best they could to teach us what they thought would help us. And now we have this opportunity to relax. Abraham went on to say, you've managed over time to build barriers and separations between who you are in your physical body and who you really are as source energy. And so sometimes you feel negative emotion that you describe as fearful or insecure, worried or lonely. And what you are describing really with every negative emotion is that you have chosen, because you always do, to focus on something that is vibrationally different enough from your broader point of view that you've introduced resistance into your energy field. So you deprive yourself of the fullness. You are depriving yourself of the presence of Source. You may be depriving yourself of someone that you care about or the manifestation you've been working on. In other words, you're the only one who can allow or deprive yourself of something that you want. And it's all about the vibrational stance. There, it's all about the thoughts you feel. A thought you think, therefore, it's all about the way you feel. Coming into alignment, being in harmony with the peace and the beauty, the grace and the wholeness, the unity and the love and the light of our being. It's all already here. It's never been gone. It's always been present. But our capacity to perceive it is greater or lesser in any particular moment. And the last piece of what I want to share to you comes from my fourth book in the Chatting with the Beloved series, the one that's in progress now. The first three are written, and the proof copies of the first one will be here within a week. So I'm really excited about that. But this is from the fourth most recent book. And in this, I refer to an experience I had with a lifeguard at the pool two summers ago, I guess. And I was the only one in the pool. And when I went, I was the only one in the pool enclosure. And when I got up to go swim my laps, Dimitri, the young Bulgarian lifeguard, climbed to the top of the tower. And he sat there and watched me swim laps for a half hour, even though I was the only one there. And when I got out, I thanked him for taking such good care of me. and he was climbing down the guard stand at that moment, and he turned to me with loving sincerity, and he said, "Every time."
Mm.
Every time. And I cried. Tears came to my eyes when he said that, because I felt the essence of the Beloved in that statement, because the Beloved is here with us every time. And in this particular chat with the Beloved, I start out talking to them about that story. I said, "I've told the every time story to several of my friends, B." I call them B for short. "It seems to be sticking. I've heard it come back as they tell me about relaxing into well-being. They tell me that it reassures them too to know that you are caring for us every time." B said, "Caring or us, C." That's what they call me, C. "Caring or us." "Caring or us." "Every time." And we laughed. I said, "I love that about you, B. I wish I were more like you." They said, "You are like us, C. You are a part of the we that we are. You are us. We are you. That wishing to be what you already are is a limiting pattern of thought. You are growing in your ability to see the beauty of your being and the world around you. When you find yourself wishing to be something you are not, stop. Notice that you're doing it again. Then ask yourself, in what ways can I see I am already that?" Let's take an example. What do you wish you were that you're not? I said, "Fit." They said, "Good. Ask yourself, in what ways am I already fit?" So I did. In what ways am I already fit? And I answered it. "Well, I can see and hear and taste and smell. I can walk. I can swim laps for a half hour without stopping. I digest my food beautifully. I can breathe deeply. I sleep well. I have a good range of motion in my joints. I stretch easily. Wow, I'm already fit in so many ways. What a revealing exercise. It feels very different to think I'd like to be even more fit than I already am." B said, "There's always something more, C. You are endlessly stretching into something more." And I said, I am enough already. Yay! B said, "Enough and way more than enough. C, you are magnificent. Everyone is, in powerful and exciting ways. You can do this with other people too. Ask yourself, in what ways is she already kind? In what ways is he already interesting? And you will find there is evidence of kindness and interest everywhere you look for them." I said, "Wow, that's cool, B. I like looking for positive aspects in people, and this makes it even easier." They said, "We're glad you like it, C. You're easy to please. We love that about you." I said, "I love that about me, too. I find lots of things to enjoy everywhere I go. I can easily see how cultivating appreciation has changed my life for the better. I'm glad to have this new tool to play with today, B. Thank you. I am loved." They said, "Every time and always. Have fun." And the book is called Filled with Light. And I love that I got to say something from that book in the same talk that I told you the Adam story about the universe being filled with light. Because unlike Adam, I don't see it everywhere always. I am more like his mom. I've seen it, and it comes and goes. But I love that I cultivate knowing it's there even in the moments when I don't see it. And so we have the opportunity to loose the boundaries of our sense of self and let in more spiritual territory, to recognize who we really are at a deeper level, and to allow that individualization of the divine through us as us, being our authentic self, feeling our feelings, experiencing our guidance, following our impulses, knowing, like that little boy in the pool, that he's really good at the things that he does, and he's growing, and he's learning all the time. We are that. We are. And so it is. So we're going to take a